Rodgers almost going to fall for Martinez. Antonell trying to get there. Martinez finishes to give away the man.
It's an absolute peach from the Paraguayan Miguel Almirón.
Atlanta United, in just their second year of existence, have won MLS Cup.
Ojo con la.
Patrick, what a great piece of land you were at yesterday.
It was surprisingly really nice. I was talking to Doug about it yesterday. It was just nice. It was just nice to be out there. It was a nice day. I think some combination of the scenery of the actual plot of land and the weather kind of just had everybody in a really good, uplifted, almost like spiritual mood of sorts. But like, yeah, I just wrote like a little kind of how I was feeling about the day on 5stripefinal.com that actually just got posted. So you can go, if anybody's listening to this, you can go read that now. But it was just like optimism. You know, it was just kind of filled me with optimism about, you know, these people kind of coming together from all over. It's kind of funny. I was like, you know, I don't know about you. I don't know what your habits are listening to music and whatnot in the car. But like for me, a lot of it's like, it's mood based. So if I'm like trying to get myself amped up for like a game, you know, going to a game, I might listen to something a little bit more upbeat. If it's like nighttime and it's kind of more like urban driving, I might listen to a certain type of music versus like if I'm like on a golf course or something or like. And so anyways, I was driving like through the woods basically to get to this place in Fayetteville. So I threw on my country playlist and I was just kind of laughing to myself. I'd like turn down. It was like Johnny Cash was on. I'd like turn it down before I rolled down my window to tell like the kind of corporate admin who was like standing on this gravel road my name and outlet so I could get in. But you know, it was just kind of one of those days where it struck me as kind of being really funny that like all these people are coming together from all over the place to build this massive project and out of nothing. You know, it's weird when you just see a plot of land that's just still beautiful, but nothing on it.
Joe, we gotta pause for a second because no one knows what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. That's all I've been thinking about for the last like 36 hours. Yeah, so there was a break ground ceremony yesterday for the new U.S. National Training Center, which is officially being named, which they revealed yesterday, the Arthur M. Blank United States Soccer National Training Center, something like that. Might not have soccer in it, but yeah, named after Arthur Blank for, I'm sure, his monetary donation. But, you know, also something that I've learned with just kind of reporting the story, because I talked to JT Batson, the CEO, that post kind of went up on 5stripefinal when we launched. So I've kind of talked to several parties involved with this. And what I heard from JT especially was it's not so much the money that where Blank and his organization has been helpful as much as it has been the connections to like corporate people, which is like kind of money, you know, money sources or whatnot. I guess you could say just like kind of sources of capital around town, but also like, and also connections to political leaders because, you know, the Blanks with everything that they've done with Mercedes-Benz Stadium and the Falcons, they've got connections to all these people and can make these introductions. So whether that's the, you know, the mayor of Atlanta, Andre Dickens, you know, they could, you know, introduce soccer, U.S. soccer people to him or to, you know, the governor's office or the local Fayetteville municipality leaders. You know, all these people, it's hard, I think, for an outside organization to kind of come in and you need someone like Arthur Blank and the people that he has around him to kind of massage all these things and make it a lot more kind of seamless to have this integration come into place. So, but yeah, it was a great day to be out there. Obviously, not a whole lot's been done physically, but it was kind of a, you know, you just thought about what it's going to be in even a couple years here. And we even got to talk to some of the extended national teams players. One was from the cerebral palsy team. And I apologize, I forget there was a couple others, but they were clearly like super excited about, you know, the opportunity and what's on the horizon for them. And I think everybody was just kind of smiles and it was kind of a feel good day out there.
Joe Patrick, it takes a different kind of man. A Costnerian kind of man, if you will, in the ilk and same vein as Kevin Costner, to look at a plot of land and say, that's a good piece of land. I don't have that in me. I don't have that in me, but I know you do. And I'm glad you got to have that experience yesterday to look around that plot of land and go,
It was great. You know? It was great.
I respect
you
that.
You know, another one of my passions in life is golf. And, you know, that's also kind of a part of golf is like seeing, and this is something I can never do, but like what I really admire in a lot of designer golf course designers is just seeing the raw land and then being able to imagine, you know, the holes that are being played. And so the same goes for architects and things like that. I'm just amazed at these people because it's a mixture between like you have to have the creativity to kind of see it on top of the expertise in terms of the nuts and bolts and how you will actually kind of put these things together. So I'm just amazed at people who build things in general, whether that's a building, whether that's a business, a project or whatever. I just think it just gives me optimism to see that in this world, especially, you know, and I kind of made this point in the post in a world that where it's just like easy to be cynical and down. And I get that way too. Like I put myself kind of right at the head of that as someone who can think a little bit too cynically and critically. And it's inspiring to see people who have such a passion to do this and the expertise to pull it off. You kind of know that they're going to do this thing the right way, which is exciting as well.
So Patrick, how do you feel about people who can build a soccer team that can actually win on the road in MLS?
That may be even more impressive than being a world-class architect, honestly. That might
agree.
Be the hardest thing to do in the world.
I gotta agree. Good news with the training facility, good news with 50,000 people in the building for She Believes Cup. Kind of mid news,
yeah,
in New York for Atlanta United on Saturday, mm-hmm, in a 1-1 draw. We're gonna get into that in just a moment. First, a few housekeeping things. First, thanks to Kurt Castle on the intro. The song is Chances. You can check out Kurt's music wherever you check out music. A few things as well. Check out fasttrackfinal.com if you have not already. The full version of the show will be on there, as well as Joe's piece he just talked about. Some analysis coming your way tomorrow about Noah Cobb. A few other things throughout the week as well. Always getting in depth and getting as critical as we possibly can over the course of an MLS week on fasttrackfinal.com. Check it out if you haven't already. Tell your friends, just $7 a month for the best Atlanta United coverage around. We also want to thank our partners at Lucid FC. Head to lucidfc.us for some of the best streetwear you're going to find in Atlanta. We appreciate them being partners with us for a long time now and appreciate them powering this very show. Joe Patrick.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to you about this game because we have not discussed it. I think like a little, I don't think we've spoken one word to each other about actually what transpired on the field there on Saturday night. So I'm excited to talk about this.
Well, look, I think I'm going to start here. Post shot XG for Atlanta United, 2.9. Post shot XG for NYCFC, 1.1. In a lot of cases, that gets you a win. And on this night, it just wasn't it. It just wasn't it. It felt deserved to get a draw. It felt a little hectic towards the end. I think everyone was okay with the final whistle sounding, especially as Atlanta continued to lose players. Jamal Tiare, Derek Williams, all coming off, or at least picking up injuries towards the end of the game, right?
Yeah.
It got a little frantic there. But as a whole, Atlanta United were the better team on a night where you are playing in a situation that is not conducive to playing actual soccer. It's pretty much an entirely different sport on some level.
Yeah, yeah. I hate to like get on here and like criticize MLS for all these things, but man, it's just like playing in these soccer stadiums is woof. I mean, everything from the size of the field to the sod that was laid down, you know, the players and Gonzalo Pineda talked about it after the game. It matters. You know, it's something that actually affects the game. I'm glad you brought up the post-shot XG and how much Atlanta kind of dominated in that respect, or how much of an edge they had there. Because if you look at just the regular XG, it looks like NYCFC was like clearly the better team on the night.
Just to add something there real quick, it depends on what source you're looking at. There are huge disparities in XG across multiple sources right now. We don't know why, but my gut instinct is to not trust the current data provider for MLS. So yes, I'm going to agree with you that in general, it looks like NYCFC had a little bit more XG than Atlanta United.
Yeah, so the stats I'll almost always be going off of when we talk is from the FOTMOB app, which is on my phone, just because it's the easiest for me to just pull up. So that's what I'm going off of, and they had 2.45 XG for NYCFC to 1.89 for Atlanta, which isn't a huge discrepancy, but it would probably tell you that, you know, NYCFC had the better of it. And then NYCFC had 24 shots to Atlanta's 18, 17 shots inside the box to Atlanta's 12. But when you bring up the post-shot XG, I think it shows something that I felt like I was watching during the game, which was that a lot of NYCFC shots, even if they were coming technically from inside the box, they were kind of just on the edges, and there was lots of guys in the way, and a lot of them were getting blocked, and it didn't really feel like they had as many clear-cut chances, frankly, as Atlanta United had. I think Atlanta United did have more like clear-cut chances by the actual, you know, metric that is clear-cut chances in the game. And there was like even one of them I just could not believe didn't go in, which was Saba's little press of the goalkeeper, who somehow got a hand on that ball that Saba had kind of almost tackled into tackled into the goal. But yeah, I think Atlanta was kind of unfortunate for them not to have scored some goals. But having said that, all of this 1-1 is probably, you know, it, you could say it's the just result or whatever. There wasn't a lot between these two teams. It was kind of a frantic one, fun one to watch because of that.
Yeah, no, I think you're okay with it in the end. We talked in the lead up about how important it was for Atlanta to start figuring out how to win road games. And, you know, against a bad team like NYCFC, you would hopefully be able to pull that out. But you also understand that circumstances change when the field changes to that level. Like, you go back and watch I watched through Chicago and NYCFC this morning just on the tactical cam, right? And you could clearly see a huge difference and just the Mercedes-Benz Stadium field and what they were getting at Citi Field, you know. It doesn't take much to recognize that that's going to change how teams approach the game. And I think it manifested an interesting way in this one, and it's mostly that you just spent all of your time in a 18-yard box, whether it was yours or the opponent's, right? Because the entire field is pretty much the 18-yard box, you know? A struggle for Atlanta, I think, to reorganize and understand the spacing in particular, because you have to do it a little quicker. Everything is increased in urgency because you have that kind of smaller space between those areas where you have to scramble, right? And I think that's where Atlanta kind of got called out a few times. I think NYC was pretty clean on the ball as well. But what Atlanta did well is when NYCFC did get into those areas, when they did get into the 18-yard box, when they did kind of break lines, they reorganized well, they got into the box and set up, you know, roadblocks for NYCFC that made things really difficult. Like you said, Joe, I think you look at like 23, 24 shots, whatever they had in this one, not a lot of them felt all that threatening. The positions they were in didn't feel threatening in a lot of cases, you know, and I think, you know, the post-shot XG, you're exactly right, it bears that out. It bears that out. It could have been a win if not for just a goofy penalty that shouldn't have happened, right? Like, I'm going to defend Tyler Wolf here. I think he kind of got slated when this play initially happened, but going back and watching it, he plays the pass that ends up going directly to an NYCFC player who gets taken down in the box by Tristan. I think it was a pin. But Tristan just kind of lets the ball run by him in this case for no real reason. And that's when it goes right to the NYCFC player. I don't know if he just expected it to go to a center back, but Tyler is in the clear there for me, even if he didn't have a necessarily great game everywhere else.
Yeah, I took that particular play as a misplaced pass from Tyler, but one that could have been dealt with by Muyumba. But I think that just because it was misplaced, I think he thought it was going to somebody else, so he didn't really make a play for it. And then once it didn't, and once he realized what had happened, he tried to scramble back, fouled the guy. You know, it's unfortunate. It's one of those things that happens, and it's one of those for me where it's similar to some of the other goals that this team has conceded that we've talked about, where it's just you want to always just pin these things down on one player, or you want to pin it down on like the simplest like story you can, you know, craft in your mind, basically, because you want it to be a fixable problem that you can just not have happen again. Ultimately, it's just one of those things that tends to happen in games, and you hope to try to for them not to happen as frequently as possible. But, you know, Atlanta, again, one of the reasons why they're unlucky is because you felt like they should have scored more than one goal in this game. They deserve to have more than one goal and, you know, win it 2-1 or something like that. So
they had
it wasn't perfect from them.
Yeah. They had a big opportunity too towards the end of the game, and we talked about clear cut chances.
Yeah,
I'm not even sure it registered as a clear cut chance because Derek Etienne directed the ball back towards the 6-yard box instead of right in the goal. I'm sure he wants that one back. It felt, unfortunately, very Ben Simmonsy in the nature of giving up a very open shot in order to do something else that was not conducive to scoring. Really frustrating moment there, and
Sam,
a frustrating night.
Sam,
overall,
I want to go back to, you know, the penalty, because I did want to kind of highlight Muyumba. I actually thought he was really good in this game. He made the he makes the error giving away the penalty there. But generally, I thought he was really, really solid in terms of, you know, just helping the team transition, doing the things that he does in possession that we're accustomed to. But 6 tackles for him in this game, 5 recoveries. Like, he was really winning the ball back for Atlanta United in some crucial areas. He was 16 for 20 in his ground duels overall on both sides. So, which ground duels includes like offensive dribbles, dribbling by someone or something like that. So, really impressive game from him. You know, there weren't like a ton of bad performances from the individual players on the team, and I guess that's what you would expect with a game that ends 1-1 and they the other team scores their goal by way of a penalty. I was frankly pretty pleased with Jamal Tiari. I thought he led the line really well, had some really nice touches, both for himself to score, but also contributing to, you know, the movement and kind of playing as the hold-up guy up top. Almada had some chances to score. I've heard some kind of criticism of his game. I didn't think that he was particularly good or bad. I just thought it was, you know, a pretty typical game from him, which is generally positive. So I don't have a lot of complaints out of this game, even though I feel like it's one of those games that fans are going to have maybe more complaints than any so far this season, just because they're craving this road win so badly.
Yeah, I think Thiago had one of those games where you just have a higher standard for him. I think there are moments where he possibly could have created chances, didn't see them, or just misplayed passes. He's doing this thing lately where he loves to play a switch across basically the top of Atlanta's own 18, and it stresses me out. Every time he got away with it a couple times, but one time he didn't, and it led to a pretty bad mistake and a transition chance for NYCFC. They're just little things right now where it just doesn't feel crisp with him. But overall, yeah, I think I'll agree that he was pretty kind of right in the middle, you know, and that's fine because Atlanta was creating chances elsewhere. I think pretty much everyone across the board, relatively decent. Like I said, I think Tyler did have his struggles and they were noticeable on some level because the mistakes he made were ones that stood out in a lot of ways. But overall, he was fine. The wings were having a tough time getting anything on the ball. He only had a few less touches than Saba. You know, I thought Saba was pretty good. Yeah. It's just that there's just not a whole lot of space and room to operate in this game.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to mention that as well. Again, with the size of the field, and we kind of knew this. Like, we talked a little bit about it coming into the game, but you could really see it in action while the game was going on, how Atlanta's typical tactic or strategy to get the ball into these wide areas is just not as effective on these fields because there's just not the same kind of space, both for the players who are in the wide positions to you know, make an impact and maybe get to the byline or you know, put in a cross. But even, and then when you put in the cross, there's just not as much room for the players in the box because the entire field is the box. there's just not as much like empty space for attackers to try to, you know, attack and exploit and get on the end of something. So it's just a lot harder for them to create. And there was one play that stood out. I think it was in the first half, and it was a really nice flowing move. You know, gosh, probably 6 or 7 players touched it in the buildup, you know, ball goes back, forward. It's kind of moving around. It finally gets out to Lennon on that right side on the overlap, and it's all just so perfect. And then, you know, he puts in the cross, and it gets cleared out, and immediately NYCFC is kind of counterattacking the other way. And I think Muyumba ended up breaking up that counterattack. But the point is that it's like you had all this great play. You send in one cross. It's unsuccessful, and immediately the other team is going the other way. I don't know what the answer to that is, but it's just frustrating to watch. It's frustrating to watch the team play so well, but then it just kind of end in such a whimper like that that ultimately could have backfired on them.
It highlighted a lot of NYCFC's best and worst traits at the same time as well. I do want to point that out. They do have a really decent spine on some level, especially kind of in the back of that, right? Where you have Keaton Parks and James Sands playing as your double pivot. You have Martins there as a center back. Matt Freeze been really good this year.
He was really good. Yep.
He was really good last night, obviously, or excuse me, Sunday. Wait, gosh, Saturday.
Saturday.
you can see that from his post shot XG compared to the one goal he let in, you know? There were difficulties there, but you also see like Munsif Bakar get into decent spaces, but kind of have a terrible game putting chances on frame and getting into potential areas that were a little more dangerous. You know, there were a lot of issues in attack for NYCFC, and it feels like that penalty bailed them out in a lot of ways. But there were difficulties for Atlanta United that they worked through. They did relatively well, all considered, for playing on a smaller field. It really does kind of feel like a game where if it was at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, it's like a 3-1 Atlanta United win.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
yep,
totally. You take that on the road. You take that kind of performance over and over on the road.
Right.
That's all you can really do, you know?
Yeah. And that's why I think, you know, that would be kind of my word toward anyone who's feeling particularly cynical about this game for Atlanta and the fact that they didn't win on the road once again, which is that if you play like this on the road, I don't know if more often than not you win, but like more often than not, you're going to get the results that you want over the course of the season. You know, it's like you have to be process oriented over the results oriented. Because there have been Atlanta United games where they win on the road and they look absolutely crap doing it, but they, you know, kind of get a luck goal go in or something like that. It hasn't happened often. I'm remembering it seemed like there was one in Minnesota, like I think the first year, maybe. No, it wouldn't have been the first year, maybe the second year, I think, in 2018. But anyways, prioritize the how they perform, how they look. And I actually thought that they looked good in this game. It's unfortunate for them that they didn't get the result.
Remember, we're looking
also,
at like,
you know,
we're looking at like 8 road wins. 8.
Yeah.
I think I did the math on this. And 8 road wins for Supporters Shield winners on average the last like 7 years. Just 8. 8 out of 17.
And that's for the Supporters Shield winner. Yeah,
right.
That's for the best.
So
if
you do what they did against NYCFC over and over again over the next 14 road games, you're probably going to be something close to 8. You know?
Yeah.
You just got to keep doing it.
And they were missing 3 players.
Yeah.
A designated player, their leading striker, their, you know, top center back. Yeah. So, and again, this is not to make excuses. I'm just using this to project what this team can do on the road going forward, which I think they can get even better than they were Saturday night. And I'm sure they will have to be better than they were Saturday to get results in some games because NYCFC isn't the strongest team, especially right now. But I wasn't discouraged with what I saw, which I just get the feeling that some people will be, but I really don't think that you should be because I think it was generally pretty positive. I liked what Caleb Wiley did too. You know, these guys in defense get overlooked a lot, but I thought that the back line held up really, really well.
This is exactly where I was going. I was going to give a shout out to the back line as a whole, especially over the last couple of games, even with Noah Cobb being plugged in. They've done a really nice job of setting the line. I've done a really nice job of organizing. They've stayed compact when they've needed to. They've made the right decision a lot of the time when one player has to go out and step to somebody on the ball. They've just made the right choices and they've stayed consistent and they've stayed organized in a way that wasn't really happening a lot over the last couple of years. That was a point of emphasis for this team coming into the season. I think Derek Williams has played a key part in that. But I also notice that Caleb Wiley and Brooks Lennon are doing the damn thing right now defensively. They're doing an excellent job, especially when they have to get back and reset, you know. It's been really impressive, and that will get better when Sion Gregerson is back. However, Joe Patrick, I think we do have to talk a bit in a moment anyway about some of the injuries that Atlanta United are taking on right now. Yeah. But real quick, I do want to say one more thing about this particular game, and I want to get your thoughts on this. Joe Patrick, would you have started Edwin Mosquera?
I
It's tough, right?
Yeah, it is tough. I think, you know, I understand starting Tyler Wolf. I understand the thought process behind it. I do think Tyler Wolf is just better on the ball, like in tighter areas, like if you're, you know, in possession. Basically, what I'm trying to say is, I don't know. Like, would I have? I don't know. I would want to see Edwin Mosquera start in maybe a situation that's less atypical than playing at Citi Field is, where he would have more chances to exploit his speed and his ability to get wide and stretch out defenses. But I don't think that necessarily would have changed anything that happened Saturday night. So, I would say no to the question of, like, I think that Tyler Wolf was fine. I don't know. What about you? Do you have a thought on this?
My concern with Edwin is defensively. I don't know what kind of pressure he's going to be able to apply. I don't know how he's going to be tracking back. And I think teams might be able to potentially exploit that space kind of in behind the wing and in front of Caleb Wiley or Brooks or whoever else, right? That's the big thing for me. And I think that's why Tyler starts ahead of him is because of that defensive ability. And essentially that's just, you know, putting in the work and being properly positioned a little more often. You know, it's not a huge, huge thing, but I think it does have a longer or a larger effect over time, you know? And so when you play Edwin for 60, 70, 80 minutes or whatever, there are more chances of that coming back to hurt you a little bit. You know, when, you know, if you bring Edwin off the bench and he's got 30 minutes to make an impact and attack, that's about all the time he really needs. You know?
Right. Right. Yeah.
We saw that with the assist to Tiari. It was incredible.
Right. Yeah, totally. Yeah, I agree with that. You saying that about Wolf, though, reminds me of the fact that his first career start in MLS under Gabriel Heinze was as a central midfielder. I think it was like in a central midfield pairing, which just goes to show, like, I think how more well-rounded he is in his game, which again, to your point, includes like defensive instincts and being aware of certain situations and how to cover and help your teammates off the ball, where Mosquera might not be as sharp because he's like a forward, you know, he's really looking to attack and score goals, which is really fun. That's why we all want to see him in games. But yeah, when you're trying to play the long game over the course of 90 minutes, maybe it makes sense to start someone who's going to give you a little bit more stability. It's something I was saying when I was doing the pregame show on 929 beforehand, which was like, you know, I just didn't want this game to get away from Atlanta early, which I feel like happens to them on the road. And so I think in that respect, I think it makes a lot of sense to do basically exactly what Pineda did, which is to start Wolf and then hope that Mosquera can provide that injection that you need in the 30 minutes. And I think he did do that.
Now, I will say, as we think about Philadelphia on Sunday at home in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, Ishani Silva is out.
Yeah.
I am Mosquera curious in this case.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a game that fits him a little better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That would be a game that would be much more amenable for him. But that game is kind of scary to think about with all these injuries that Atlanta's got piled up. I have, you know, I've heard some people, again, whenever you have a lot of injuries, you have kind of an injury crisis like this, you hear it's like, oh, well, what are they doing training? This one really does seem to be just some random things. You know, you've got Gigi, who just, like, you know, knocked knees with someone. He's got a bone bruise. A meniscus isn't really like something that's like a soft tissue type of thing that for Steon, which required surgery for him. It's not like everybody's all of a sudden got a hamstring. You know, it's you got lots of different things going on. It's just unfortunate that they seem to be stacking up in some positions. And it's going this team might need to score 3 or 4 goals against Philadelphia if they want to get a result.
Hey, at least they're short term. That's the silver lining in all this, right? You know, no one's blowing out their Achilles for the third time in a month.
Right.
You know, that's what I'm kind of taking from it. Like, if we can keep it short term here, then I think Atlanta's going to be all right. But it does present a unique challenge on Sunday. I'll put it that way. Derek Williams out for 2 to 4 weeks. Jamal Tiare out for 2 to 4 weeks. He has a tweet about that if you want to go read a bit more about how he's feeling. Look, it's not great to have your 18-year-old who's kind of who's doing a great job. I have a column I'm going to try to get out tomorrow on Noah, on what he's been doing the last couple of games. And the last couple of games in more traditional scenarios, right, where he doesn't have eight other people also out of the team. You know, when he's kind of with the full team, he's done really, really well, I thought. His positioning's been good. He has a good understanding of moments in the game. He just kind of needs to learn when to be aggressive a little more often. You know, that's his big thing right now. And he's not going to have Derek Williams next to him to help organize. You know, he's going to have potentially Lewis Abram, if I had to guess, right? It doesn't seem like Steon's back yet. It's going to be Abram probably starting next to him. In a game where you really need your center backs to be hyper aware and aggressive because Philadelphia is so direct and is going to challenge you constantly, is going to play with two strikers, and is going to ask questions of you over and over and over again. If you are a center back, two players who just generally need to be more aggressive, Lewis Abram and Noah Cobb, are going to have their hands full.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, like, I'll be interested to see how Noah looks playing next to Abram, because at this point, like, I think Noah is the better player of the two. Like, he's the one that I would have more confidence in. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him look a lot more rough playing against or playing next to, you know, a partner who's just not as well suited to assist him and help him in the ways that he needs at this age, like a guy like Derek Williams is. Can very well see kind of communication not being good, up to snuff on Sunday. You know, we'll see. I don't want to like predict misery for this team, but it'll be interesting to see how he looks. I think it'll be another test for him, another kind of professional test. That's one of the things with Noah I'm just interested to see how he deals with, is, you know, it's a lot of firsts for him at this point in his career, whether that's like first start, you know, first road game, first time playing on a baseball field, all these things, you know. So this will be his first time getting to play with, you know, a fellow kind of reserve in defense, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm not necessarily as worried about the attack. You know, I think this team is relatively deep at striker. We might get Daniel Rios starting, which could be interesting. Yeah. He looked relatively sharp in his very minimal appearance, but, you know, he's a quality on some level MLS player. You know, it's not going to be a massive, massive, massive drop off to where it kills the team or anything like that. So I think they'll be relatively fine there, but it's going to be tough. Philadelphia coming to this one undefeated. Their U-17s just won Generation Adidas Cup for the second time, so they're probably going to run on some incredible, like, 15-year-old you've never heard of who's going to be immediately great. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult. I find it tough to feel optimistic about that even at home on Sunday, but we'll see. We'll see. The good news is
Jim Curtin's going to get the last laugh in Atlanta. That's just always annoys me. Always annoys me.
Gigi could be back, by the way. We're not for sure on that, but he could be back. We'll get an update on that.
He was kind of be surprised if he's not, to be honest. I thought it was a little bit surprising that he missed this game. It sounded like they were... Well, nobody actually said it out loud, but I know, like, Pineda after the game previously didn't seem to think it was a big deal with Gigi. They didn't have an MRI for him at all. So I think that I was certainly thinking that he was more likely than not to play this game. I would hope that he's back next week. We'll see, though.
Kind of need him. Might need him. Joe, we need to go ahead and answer a whole bunch of questions. You guys can go listen to those questions if you're already on FastStrikeFunnel.com. If you're not, you need to go there and subscribe to FastStrikeFunnel.com and get this podcast right into your Substack feed or into any other feed you want to. There are ways to do that. But check it out, FastStrikeFunnel.com, $7 a month for much more analysis than this, we promise. Cool? Let's answer some questions.
Let's do it.
Joe Patrick, Chris F. says, in the lead up, both of y'all said we should win, and then immediately after said take the point and run. Is this still a good point given the soft PK and the injury to our only striker after 60 minutes? Wow, Chris, this is pretty passive aggressive view, I'm not going to lie.